You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
This movie has to start off like this because everybody thinks they're funny and original.
Am I right? Or was that too loud?
You just killed all of us right now, Chris.
Yeah. I was going to laugh, but I'm trying to keep the volume down.
I'm laughing inside right here.
I'm laughing inside.
We are reviewing A Quiet Place. In fact, joining me is Patience.
Patience.
And then Rob Summers. So we got part of the Deliberations of Doom.
Yeah, Doomers. Represent.
And then Marco is joining us for this as well.
Because Marco's awesome.
Barely doomful.
This is one of these movies. They did not screen for press, which is why we did not have a before it review, but everyone was literally, I got like 6 emails from people going, are you not going to do A Quiet Place? I'm like, God damn it. All right.
Some of us actually paid to see the
movie
out
of pocket.
Well, I was going to.
We wanted to see it that badly.
And then one of the guys, George, who's on the site, he's like, oh dude, I have a rain check you can use. So I got him for free. Anyway.
I did actually have a free birthday ticket.
Why doesn't everyone here have movie pass?
Because we like to go to good theaters.
Yeah, I almost never
every theater in Austin takes movie
even
pass.
Alamo?
Yeah.
Every Alamo takes
Because I would almost never use it.
Well, you wouldn't because you see all the movies in advance, but even then it's only like $10. All right, whatever.
Yeah.
They're not sponsoring.
We're not reviewing MoviePass.
So they should. They're awesome and everybody should
sponsor us, MoviePass.
But A Quiet Place kind of surprised me. Because
Quiet Man's a good movie.
Quiet Man's a great movie, not directed by John Krasinski from The Office, of course. Jim from The Office, who he's still, I think, best known for. But he certainly has gone, you know what, I'm a film guy now. Definitely making his effort first as an actor and then following up as a director. With a couple of films, I was like, yeah, it was okay. Like, brief interviews with Hideous Men, where I was like, yeah, it was all right.
Very festival indie.
Yeah.
And the second one, too, more of a, you know, guy comes home to his quirky family. Like, they were both his movies
Promised
were very
Land,
indie.
I think.
I'm sorry?
Promised Land.
He didn't direct that.
He wrote it. Yeah,
he
yeah.
co-wrote it with...
Well, one thing's for sure, he's going to be directing a lot more stuff now.
Well, yeah, I think it's one of those because he was trying different genres, and it sounds like horror is a real big stick for him because A Quiet Place actually managed to do something I had not seen in horror movies, which was use the simple enough technique of putting the audience in this mindset of like, I mean, the perfect movie for the Alamo Draft House, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
But like, if you make any sound, you die. And any sound in this movie, you jump. You're just like, oh, Jesus!
Well,
you know?
The film does that's really smart is, if you think about it, that let's not make a sound because we might be attacked at any moment, that is the foundation of countless sequences and stories across different media.
Yeah, but not
But never
an entire
have you
film.
Seen this extended to a feature length. And to take that simple idea, and this is why I think a lot of good horror is just based on a simple idea, and to just play by the logic of those rules and stick to them, that makes this very effective. Yeah. I think we need to set this movie up a little bit.
A simple idea for this, it's 2020, so near future, and most of the Earth has died out because of a race of sightless... No senses, basically, except touch and super sensitive hearing beasties have shown up from space. And, you know, who's left is the people who figured it out in time to be able to, like, survive. But even then, how long can you go through your day-to-day life without making a loud sound? You know, I mean, really try – go a week without making one sound.
Well, one of the
no sneezing.
Yeah, no sneezing.
Yeah, no loud poops.
If you accidentally stub your toe, you can't yell, God damn it. Because, you know, I mean, literally, the way these things... It was so funny because earlier when we were watching the other guys record their podcast, Matt was in here and he had a toy that went off and made a noise.
Yeah.
And I whispered to him, I said, you know, if you had been in A Quiet Place, you would have already been dead.
Right.
The first 5 minutes of the movie.
Well, John Krasinski in here is the father of a family. He's married to his real life wife, Emily Blunt. And when we see him, like I said, they're already kind of... I don't know if adapted is the right word, but they have a strict set of rules that the family is familiar
with. It starts
on
day 89.
Right.
So they've had a few months to come to terms with this. They are not in a major urban center. They're near a small town. They're near the woods.
Yeah.
So that's protected them. But I think a very nice touch, they don't really make too big a point about this, but one of the reasons they have survived when so many haven't is because they have a daughter who is deaf. So this is a family that is already used to speaking in sign language.
Right.
And that's one of
Millicent Simmons, who is actually deaf.
Actually
in
deaf.
Real life.
Amazing in this.
And that's one of the things I wanted to comment about the movie and that I really, really enjoyed about it is that this is, other than I think maybe Hush, I think this is like one of the first horror films I've seen that just incorporates that whole, the deaf community. Mm-hmm. And as someone who spent some time in the deaf community when I was learning ASL back in my undergraduate days, which was too long ago, but we had to spend a lot of time doing community service at the deaf school. And I mean, like the way that they feel so sort of outside the normal bounds of just regular day-to-day life, I really appreciated how this was about like really embracing deaf culture. And I really liked that about this movie.
And there was definitely a part of this film in the dynamic of the family that was interesting, where the girl who was deaf was convinced that her father didn't love her as much as he did the rest of the family. And that's a running dynamic. And then that affects the larger picture that I thought was actually quite touching. There's the emotional stuff, whereas I wouldn't say any of the characters go into, you know, we don't go into deep dive into who these people are as people, but they give you everything you need to know.
And even the setup you described about the aliens and what happened, that's all done with just like newspaper clippings.
Yeah.
Very little talking. There's not like some broadcaster who comes in and like gives everybody, you know, at the top of the movie, like a little rundown of what's going on. There's no stock footage of people running.
Which was so refreshing because, I mean, that was, I feel like there were some parts of this movie that kind of dumbed down for the audience, you know, anticipating that like more mainstream audience as opposed to like a hardcore horror audience, which maybe we don't need that so much.
Yeah.
But the fact that they didn't really give us a lot of background on what was going on with the alien invasion, I was okay with that. You don't need that.
Well,
I mean, we don't need that.
No. We know as much as we need to know.
Exactly.
I heard some people complain about they wanted more stuff. And by the way, they've said this will, in fact, have a sequel for absolutely sure. So,
which means we're going to get a backstory no one gives a shit about.
Well, maybe. Or maybe they'll make a really interesting prequel, like when it first happens. You know, because I would like to see when it first happens.
See, to me, the thing is, when we've reviewed some apocalyptic movies, like In the Woods and, you know, It Comes at Night. I know some people weren't crazy about that movie. For me, what I like, bad title, good movie. Ignore the title, it's a good movie. But I like a post-apocalypse films that don't deal with the apocalypse. That already happened. That shit happened before the opening title credits. What these movies do is they take characters, which is, again, I think something that elevates it from a lot of other horror fare where the characters are not always fleshed out.
They're just stereotypes.
Or they're stereotypes, or they're just meat to be taken down by a slasher. You have a family, you have a backstory, you're not force-fed everything, and it's really, the apocalypse itself is not interesting. What's interesting is how people deal with it afterwards, how they make a life in this new reality.
I also do not want to make people think this is one of those movies that's like, wow, like most of this is just this people having family time. This is actually it's a tight movie. I couldn't believe it was actually
it's
as
about
long
90
as
minutes
it was because it felt like it was over in a half hour.
Yeah.
It starts up with the tension pretty damn fast, and there's not long in that movie before it's one long edge-of-your-seat tension ride till the very end of the film.
Somebody actually compared it to, like, Fury Road at one point, where it's like, yes, you have some buildup, but then once the car chase starts, the rest of the movie is a car chase. Well, the rest of the movie is basically all those scenes from Jurassic Park, all those scenes, like, you know, anytime you've been in a movie where you're watching characters like, it's in the other room. And then you hear some sound that freaks you out. That's the last half of this movie.
It's your office worker satisfyingly munching on a candy bar.
Oh, yeah.
I like the analogy of like the Fury Road, because I remember when I watched Fury Road, and I mean, I spent 20 minutes on the edge of my seat, not breathing, and didn't even realize it. And I felt like
woke up in the hospital.
and then there was definitely like, once the tension starts in this film, it does not let go.
And keeps ratcheting it up, building it in smart ways.
It's not things happening because somebody does something stupid, which causes that. It's like, they have contingency plans. They figured this out.
They've thought out so much stuff, but
if things,
you know,
still go wrong,
yeah,
things change, so they have to adapt. And
and it's even that much harder when, like, two of the members of this family are little kids.
Yeah.
And they're just like, wow, that's unpredictable in and of itself. And to make matters worse, Emily Blunt is pregnant in the film. Very pregnant.
Yeah. Jesus
which is the only issue I had with this movie at all.
That's your only issue? Saying.
No, because overall, I thought this was wonderful. Is that... who in their right mind wouldn't have, the moment this shit started up, gone to, like, raid every pharmacy and get every Plan B, every condom, everything? Like, you, the worst decision you could possibly make is, let's have an infant.
Other than guns.
Was to watch the world's quietest sex. Which they did not include here. There is a time jump in this movie, we should say, that, you know, like I said, it starts off on day 89. Some horrible shit happens, and then we jump forward another year, and you see that the family has further adapted. Their whole house is basically turned into a compound.
Yeah, literally have, like, spray-painted places where the floor doesn't creak and stuff to step.
Nothing about this life is... And that's sort of the beautiful, haunting thing about it, because you realize... Yes, obviously the terror is that if you make a loud noise, something could come out and kill you instantly. The terror, though, the dread comes out of the fact that you have a family that cannot communicate with one another. They can still communicate, but the idea of what do you do when, you know, you're in pain and you want to cry out, when, you know, you want to warn somebody but you can't yell, how do you, even the baby thing, it's like, how do you deal with a child in this new world? And the way they deal with it, they've thought that out too, and it's an image that's so sort of horrific and awful. You think, who would want to live that way?
Well, Rob, you disagreed with me about that being the worst decision.
I mean, I think that just from a logic standpoint, I feel like you're arguing it based on a logic standpoint. I had a lot of logical problems with this movie.
Thank you.
Didn't necessarily undo the movie for me, but certainly there were things that held me back. That's probably not my biggest problem, but... I think that probably by the time they know that she's pregnant, it's too late.
Yeah, it could
you know
be.
What I mean? But obviously what happened was, again, like, by the time they realize she's pregnant, they're like,
thank you.
We're like probably, you know, 2 months in or a month into this or whatever.
And
you know, they have no access to anything that could really
prevent
the pregnancy.
Well, it's regardless. Yeah.
There's some
situation.
Stairs.
And I was super not going to go there. The patient's like got there with a bullet.
She's like, bitch, wow. Mary Queen of Scots that shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you don't know. It could have been... There's obviously a lot of pain, and those people find solace with one another. They're married. They're going to do things. How they do that quietly, I don't know.
I think that this is a movie that invites you to
question
a lot of the logical things that happen in this movie. I mean, certainly, like, you know, the enemy in this film, like, their biology is pretty ridiculous. Like, it really doesn't make much sense if you think about it at all, like, that they would have survived, that they would. So, I mean, there's that kind of thing. I had lots of structural problems with the movie and stuff, but I think the strength of the movie is that a really good movie, all movies have logical problems.
Sure.
Like, almost every movie, you're like, what? That would never happen. Almost every movie. But the strength of this movie is how engrossed you are in it.
Absolutely.
You forget to question those things because you're so involved in the suspense of the specifics. But, you're right. Like, this is a very easy movie to nitpick, which is funny because it's so tight. You know what I mean? I think it's a compact movie. I think Krasinski, like, it's a very handsomely directed film. Like, I was really impressed by, like, sort of the pastoral vibe of the film.
Yeah.
Sort of, like, the sort of country nature of it was really pretty. It was very inviting. You know, sort of beautiful place where they were. I think another thing that's very, really hard to sort of dismiss is that you really understand the geography of the movie. So I got to give them props on that. You really know where things are in relation to each other. But also it's a really beautiful film. Like, I mean, you know, there's these things, there's some red lights in the film things become, you know, lit by that. It's really beautiful. So I was just as a person who works in this kind of field, like, really jealous of some of the direction of the film was like, it was very, in some ways almost, I think the movie's almost too clever. Like, it almost feels too well thought out in some ways. Like, there was a couple times where it didn't feel as sort of messy as, like, my favorite kind of movies, which is, you know, I think most people's non-complaint. Their non-complaint is that, you know, film. And I feel like this movie feels almost calculated, almost down to the millisecond of exactly what it wants to do. So, But I'm with you. Like, I had a lot of logical problems with the film, like, in a lot of ways. But I didn't think about it too much. And in the end, they didn't bother me.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember there were moments I was like, well, but then something amazing would happen.
Yeah. They're almost afterthoughts. You know, the plot holes, you don't even realize them until after you start thinking about the movie. And you're like, oh, yeah, that was kind of dumb. But at the time, you don't really care about it.
Like, they hit you, but like Chris is saying, like, all of a sudden something happens and you're into it. And so you don't focus on that problem.
It doesn't give you enough time to think about anything for very long before something else has you on the edge of your seat. Mm-hmm.
And this movie is already out, so I think we agreed that we were going to do a little spoiler
Yeah,
I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
I will say there's one sequence in here I just thought was so beautiful, and this wonderful moment of quiet where but you know what I mean? Like that sort of, like... And surprisingly not quiet. One of the only not quiet scenes in the film with actual dialogue where the father takes his kid to a place with a waterfall. Says, yeah, we can talk in a normal voice here because the waterfall
is... I think it's the first time you really hear dialogue.
The water is so much louder than we are, they can't hear us. And it's this wonderful little moment between a father and son. And
there's a moment where a piece of source music comes in. And it's a very touching, lovely moment. And it's been so quiet. And suddenly you just hear music. And it, you know, I won't tell you what song it is. It's a song I've always loved. So to hear it again, it's like, oh, that's got to be like manna for people who have been like starved of sound.
Right.
You know, and I think the interesting thing about this movie, I mean, there are a lot of theaters in town that have this sort of no quiet, you know, very quiet zone enforced policies. Mm-hmm. And there's some theaters that don't, and people just talk and chat and check their phone and do all that shit. People always talk about the noise in a theater as, like, you know, bothering the experience. Usually I can tune out a lot of that stuff. What I saw when I watched this screening is people actively trying to be quiet.
Oh, you're so lucky, because my theater showing, really? And even I went to the Alamo see this, and it was so flipping loud.
Really?
It really took me out of the movie a couple of times because I was just like, seriously, people?
Were people talking?
No, not talking, of course, not at Alamo.
Alamo actually to me seems like a bad place to see this because... Yeah.
It's
the
enforced.
Food circumstance.
That was what it was.
It's almost better to just see this in a theater where people are there and see the movie, which is what I saw.
See this the last weekend.
And then Alamo even...
See this the last weekend it's playing.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, like...
Watching
with
a crowd is great.
I mean, like, I saw in a theater that generally, like, we got there and I was like you. Like, I was kind of nervous. People were kind of chatty or whatever. Mm-hmm. The movie started... And the audience really dig into
that's,
it.
I really wish
out.
That would have happened.
At one point, one guy goes, oh shit, oh sorry.
Well, and even Alamo, they had like a special quiet menu of like non-crunchy items, and they didn't put any ice cubes in any of the drinks or anything like that, specifically so that they could reduce the food noise.
Wow.
And so that I appreciated, but people don't realize how loud they are when they're eating.
People
or coughing or sneezing or just picking up and putting... There was like a dude in the row down from me that was just picking up and putting out his drink. And I was like, can we be a little... Yeah. Like, you're really pissing me off right now.
Be the best theater.
So, yeah, maybe Alamo, maybe, spread the word. And I know a lot of people have been ranting about this on social media over the past couple days. Like, seriously, don't... buy popcorn or crunchy snacks.
Yeah, you can deal without for one fucking movie. I'm sure the Alamo doesn't want to actually say that out. Like, don't give us your money.
They had a quiet menu, and we ordered off the quiet menu. Like, what, you know,
would you have like a bowl of mashed potatoes?
No, it was like the pretzel, you know,
just pieces of cotton candy. Put them in your mouth and let them melt. You don't even have to chew.
You just get a nutrient IV drip.
Yeah.
You gotta appreciate the details when it comes to Alamo, but yeah, I mean, I heard a lot of people had really good experiences going to matinee shows, and they were like, yeah, it was really super quiet at the matinee show, but then I went and saw it again, like, at night, and I couldn't even...
I mean, I think it's frustrating because the gimmick to this movie is the silence, it's a risky... And I think what's funny is that this is a film that when you see it, you're like, yeah, you totally need to see this in a theater, but at the same time, the risk is seeing in the theater.
Right.
Because people can ruin that experience for you. And I think that it was a big gamble to make the movie that way. And it really does work. It is unfortunate. I think something like the Alamo, there's external circumstances that sort of interfere with your ability to, but it is important to be immersed in the world of the movie for it to be completely effective. I could see that if somebody behind me was just kind of making a lot of noise, and I was really worried about that, it would, this is just not a movie you can ignore that in. Not that I can really.
And I mean, there was a lot of threads that I saw specifically on, like, you know, the horror subreddits. Yeah. They're just like, wait for it to come out and watch it.
That's wrong though, because for me, what makes this great, everybody always talks about talking in the movie. I actually don't mind going to some theaters for like some popcorn movies or something and watch with a rowdy, chatty audience. I don't mind because I can tune out a lot, and usually because the movies aren't that good anyway. This was a movie that I wanted to see with people because it's one of the few. When people talk about noise in a movie, it's like this extra thing outside of the movie that's hampering your enjoyment of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas this, the silence is actually crucial to the enjoyment of the movie.
Yeah.
And to see it with an audience, the pleasure of having an audience that's actually holding their breath.
Super respectful
and
of that.
Getting into it because they want to get an experience out of it. I was lucky, more lucky than patience, I guess.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, I was too. My audience was on the whole completely dead quiet.
Yeah.
And which is great because really any sound in the movie feels like your nerves are on fire.
And the sound design on this movie is great. I mean, that's really, it's
a really technically well done film.
A lot of sound design.
Let's go to final thoughts so we can do spoilers. Okay. Marco, keep going into your final thoughts.
We may go into this in spoilers, but I did have some minor nitpicks that prevented this. Well, one major nitpick. And yes, I know that's a contradiction in terms because nitpicks are by definition minor. But I had one major nitpick that prevented this from being a near perfect movie for me. That being said, I still enjoyed the hell out of it. I had a great experience watching it in the theater with an engaged audience, which just reminds you why it's great to see movies with an audience, because that's how they were designed to be seen. I think the acting and the character work is across the board fantastic. They do wonders with a relatively small budget, great production design, great sound design, and a lot of heart into this movie. That could have been just a slasher kind of, you know, just monsters run amok kind of movie. It has a lot more heart, and consequently, there's a lot more dread because you actually give a shit about these characters and you don't want to see them get hurt. That being said, I would give this movie 8.5 one-handed shotgun pumps.
Patience.
I mean, I think we all agree here. There was definitely some like logic issues that I had problems with just because I don't know. I mean, but I don't. I think that they're minor in comparison to the overall movie. It's thrilling. It's tense. I was definitely on the edge of my seat. I didn't care about the plot holes at the time. I only cared about them afterwards. Definitely. I mean, you want the theater experience, but just, you know, take quiet snacks. Be careful. And also, you know, to the bitch that stood outside the theater screaming at the top of her lungs, the ending, you know, people are listening as they're going into the movie. So let's be cognizant of that. Let's not give anything away when you're sitting around with your friends going, oh my God, I can't believe beep happened.
Yeah.
You know, like,
until you get
like Homer Simpson leaving the theater. Like, I can't believe that that's Luke's father.
otherwise, I mean, this is definitely a film that is geared towards a more mainstream audience, but that I still liked it. I still liked it very much as a horror lover. So I'm going to give it 8.5 crunchy snacks out of 10.
Robert Summers.
Okay, real quick. I just didn't get to say it. I'm just going to try and throw all my thoughts really quick. I think this movie has a lot of really soulful, emotional performances. Krasinski is such a really good. He's like a real movie star. I know he was like almost going to be Captain America.
Yeah.
He's inherently sympathetic. I think he's great in this movie. Blunt is even better. She is an amazing actress. Yeah. Like you just can't take your eyes off her. She brings so much to everything. I think again, the movie's almost too well directed in a lot of ways. It was almost distractingly well directed for me. Everybody keeps saying there's not a lot of dialogue. No. There is a lot of dialogue in this movie. Right. It's not spoken.
Yes.
But I do feel like the implication is that people are not going to, it's all going to be purely visual. It is not. People talk a lot. They talk in American Sign Language and there's subtitles. I think it's a weird misnomer for me. It feels like a weird mischaracterization, as though like it's an Antonioni movie or something.
Right.
It's not.
There's little spoken dialogue.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but there is a lot of dialogue. Sure. The climax structure is, I mean, the setup for basically what is the film, once the film gets in motion, is really cool for me. I mean, I think as a writer and stuff, the setup, the scenario, and the cross-cutting between the sort of tense plots was really cool, what's going on there. It does build to a particular, there is as you mentioned before, there's a conflict between the daughter and the father. I'm not sure that that's really there. They imply it, but I didn't really feel it in the way that I think the movie wants you to feel it. Talk about that more in spoilers. The pre-credit sequence is terrific. Mm-hmm. A knockout. Like, you can see, like, you read that in the script and you're like, yeah, we're making this movie. I just want to mention, Steven Spielberg is going to make a movie called Watch the Skies. They've referenced it in some other movies. He didn't make it. John Sayles wrote it. And it was going to be basically what this is, Alien on a farm. Like, the aliens invade this small farm. There's a siege. That turned out to be E.T. is what he actually ended up doing.
But wow. So a few rewrites.
Russ and I, yeah, kind of got away from that. John Sayles, horror movie to, Melissa Mathison's kid movie. But this felt like I finally got that movie that I was sort of promised all along. It is hard for me to think of a person that I would not recommend this movie to. I think this is a movie, as long as you're a person who can kind of handle tense movies, this is kind of for everybody. It's pretty great. I have problems with it. I think it's good. It borders on great, but I'll get into why and spoilers. I'm going to give it 8 out of 10 super handsome scruffy beards.
I've said this a lot, and people always go, I get a lot, I don't exactly understand what you mean, and I always feel like I need to over-clarify, so I'll try not to do that. But the point being that whereas there's a lot of movies that you can nitpick on, and those are worthy things to bring up that kind of ruin the overall effect of the movie. You're like, yeah, it's brought down a lot by these logic holes or whatever, things like that. Those are because those movies don't have something that works so great in it that you forgive it. I mean, most movies have some, like you said, plot issues or logic points. Certainly most horror movies do. And if a movie is working as well as it is on this level,
yeah,
who fuck gives a fuck,
yeah,
right? I kind of was like, everything, nothing stuck in my craw at all that was going on, or at least it didn't give me time to think about it. I just was having a great time throughout this, and I'll say is honestly the first movie to scare me at all since I saw The Babadook, which genuinely freaked me out. I know, patience does
not
agree.
That's not
on
a
Babadook.
Compliment to this movie.
it really is, because The Babadook is a masterpiece.
Ugh.
Anyway, yes, I loved this. I think I agree with you so much with the act. I think Krasinski and Blunt are so terrific and utterly sympathetic in this thing. Just looking at their facial expressions.
Surprisingly, it's so soulful. Surprisingly good chemistry for husband and wife teams. Real life husband and wife right. Actors don't always have good chemistry.
but I give this 9 out of 10 plush Monopoly sets. But now on to the spoilers, because I know you guys are champing at the bit.
That's my spoiler alert.
Quiet. You don't like. Okay, now's the time to shut up. If you haven't seen this movie.
That's right. You need to see the movie, and then we'll talk some spoilers.
All
right.
So I think they've tuned out.
And 2 and 3.
And bye, y'all.
I would have solved these fucking how to kill these things 2 weeks in. I'm like, they listen to sound. Sound hurts their ears.
Maybe we should use high frequencies. That was one of the things
I
walked away. Like
the
militaries of all around the world, they couldn't figure out to like blast their eardrums.
I mean, I have to admit the logic of kind of they're blind, but they can hear. I mean,
duh.
We have a pretty distinct advantage over these guys. Like, the idea that, and I think that this speaks to like, it's neat that it sort of has this Carpenter-esque things type ambiguity that, we really don't know what happened and in the present, all stuff, but I think like it seems sort of silly that we couldn't like just be fucking like shut the fuck up as a society and like get these things out of here. And my biggest problem with the movie, and this is where the movie does, she figures out how to kill them like 10 minutes after her dad died.
Right. It's like,
the film didn't, like, I could tell, like, it really wanted to have this super emotional climax where, like, he tells her that he loves her, and, that's what the movie's built to, because it's this movie about silence and silences between people. But he does love her. Like, he keeps trying. He tells her, like, I'm building the earpiece for you, and I want you to, he's like, we'll keep trying. Like, he doesn't seem, like, the movie wants to sell you this thing that he doesn't love her because he's mad about the brother, and that completely is not... Well, doesn't feel earned.
The way I read that, because I was kind of struggling with that too at first. And what I realized is that, and I was okay with it. There was a tension between the father and the daughter, and a misunderstanding that perhaps they could have had they. There was no reason for them not to communicate.
Had they talked it out?
Yeah. No, because it was clear. She felt guilty for causing her little brother's death,
and with little kids,
right. And thought that her father was angry at her. And the reason the father's like doesn't want her to go is like. You can't hear.
Yeah.
Also, he was doing it to protect her.
Why won't he let her down in the basement?
I was unclear about that.
That didn't make any sense.
Why he would not want her down here.
The first time you step on the first time you snag your foot or anything on a nail, you go and take that nail out.
She leaves it. Like, I'm like, hang her down the nail.
I mean, it was like a huge, like, Jesus fucking. Like, that's one of the problems I had with the movie being dumbed down a little bit. Like, we don't really need that big of a foreshadowing. We get it. Like, we know what's going to happen.
They really
But she could have just walked by it. But the fact that it's like, oh no, I've snagged on it.
Yeah,
it was established now that she knows it's there.
So blatant, and I thought,
and she doesn't warn the kids.
Yeah,
it's like going down there. I was like,
I thought for sure the little girl was going to step on it.
It's like you're not going to go.
The real payoff I thought was going to be that the monsters were going to step on it, and she was going to beat them
right.
in some way. Like it was going to distract
get
them.
Get tetanus.
They're allergic to tetanus.
They didn't really like she kind of just. Has the baby super quick. Like, remember, like, he runs up there and finds
it. I know. I was like, really? I mean, like, I'm sorry, but okay. Labor does not last, now, like, now, 20 minutes.
I will defend that a little bit because I'm the first of three children. I don't know about you all. My mom said, you know, you were like 40 hours of hell. Your brother was like, or your sister was like 12 hours. Your third brother's like, boom, out, we're done.
Well, by that one, you had loosened the jar.
I was six of eight, so I was gross, like Monty Python, meaning of life. My mom was having dishes, and I just kind of popped out. Damn Catholics.
We don't know.
There's rubber singing on the end of our dickies. Sorry.
I mean, the monsters, like, biology doesn't really make sense.
It just doesn't.
Like, and I'm like... It doesn't make sense. And he's like, there's only three of them. I'm like, there's only three.
No, in the immediate
area. In their area.
They felt like they've wiped out the world.
Yeah.
Right.
And there really should be more in the immediate area than three. And what, are they feeding on humans? Like, I don't totally understand what they're doing.
Well, I feel like when he lights the fire and all of the other fires light up, those are other survivors.
Because there are lots of other survivors, but yeah. You know,
and then in the end, they light the fire and there's
you wipe out 90% of Earth's population. That's still a lot.
I feel
of
like that was
left.
My biggest problem.
I imagine they hit the urban centers first.
Oh, yeah. My biggest problem is. Why are you not wearing fucking socks?
Yeah, like, why are you going
seriously? It bothered me so much.
Well, maybe the apocalypse, that's like what they use for money.
Put some fucking socks on. I get it. Like, shoes make noise and bare feet don't. But that's fucking disgusting.
Some moccasins or something.
It did bug me a little bit that it was so telegraphed towards the end where it's like she's looking at the father... Because we see multiple shots of the father's little whiteboard where he's like, what is the weakness? Is it sound? I'm like, yes, yeah. It's sound.
Another dumbed down thing.
I just think her not figuring that out. I mean, like, we already had the brother get whacked. And it's a really emotional one. And I just felt like it felt cheap to kill the dad. Like, I felt like... For him to be in jeopardy and sacrifice himself like for her was fine. And I think at that moment, that's when she should have put... Like, to me, the best movies... And this movie's doing pretty good at it.
Yeah.
If you have to do... And then... A great climax. All the things locked together at once. This movie doesn't totally know what to do. It's like, we kind of have the climax... With the dad, and then we go into the basement, and then they beat them, and then the other, and then she figures it out, and then it's like the Matrix where it's like, first we're gonna fight on this roof with a giant helicopter, and then we're gonna fight in the subway station, and then I'm gonna figure out how the Matrix works, and then we're gonna fight in this hallway, and then I'm gonna call the Matrix. I mean, it's like, that's what this movie felt like. I was like, and then, and I was like, the movie had been too smart for that at that point, and yeah. I was like, I'm not going to give you the pass on
it. I agree. Like it needed to be messier.
That's why it's not great. It's only good for me is because it didn't figure out how to navigate the ending completely where it feels satisfying. Yeah. Did you guys, to me, the little, like thing where she cocks the shotgun. Like, did y'all like that? Because that to me felt a little like winky clever.
It was winky clever, and the audience I saw it with loved it. Yeah. I think it's one of those things. If I had been watching it by myself, I would have been like,
"It was a bit of a."
I've said it twice already, but this was geared towards a mainstream audience.
And that's fine. I am
it's
a
like
mainstream
mom is
audience.
Go out and
I
kick
love
some
all
ass.
That shit. But...
this is not for the same audience that It Comes at Night is based,
or
is
even set. Get
or
Out,
even the average horror film. No, it's got to be accessible.
They were looking for that.
I don't want to make a distinction there. I feel like
a movie
that works is a movie that works, and if it's for everybody, if it's for one person, then it's good. And I just feel like, to me, that was a little cleverish.
The fact that it's the number one movie in the country right now, and knocked off a Steven Spielberg film off the list on a $17 million budget. I think it's accessible, and I think people like it.
Well, no, but regardless of that, I hear what you're saying, totally, Rob. I think that it really needed something that gives you a feeling, I breathed at the end, and that was kind of that moment of that. Plus, everybody loves a kick-ass woman now, so.
I agree with Rob in that I really wanted the dad to come back. I was like, because it did feel a little bit like, at that point it was expected. I get it. It's like, all right, dad's going to sacrifice himself. And then to solve it 10 minutes later, that would have been something if it was like,
God damn it.
If an hour or two I figured it out later, it's like, why didn't I figure this out?
She put in the sad trombone at that point.
And it's like, all you had to do was go look at dad's noteboard. You know, he would have, that's why he didn't
want
you to
go. What is its weakness?
Yodeling.
You know, the thing I didn't like, though, was armor. He like, armor. And I was like, apparently they're armored, but a shotgun to the head kills them.
Only after they're weakened by the sound.
Literally right before that, we see a newspaper clipping real flash that says bullets don't hurt them. And I was like, what the fuck?
Because it was weakened by the sound.
Okay. So the sound makes their skin weaker?
Yes, apparently. Because that's why...
Overall, did y'all like the monster design?
It's a little similar to other ones we've seen before. I did like the way...
It didn't bother me.
The way it's like flesh would sort of like be able to move around, like little flaps and everything.
I think it had a little too many parts because I couldn't sense what all those other fucking organs were for. But the close-ups, I like the ear canal design. Mm-hmm. I like that. And I like the fact that they, for most of the movie, they took the Jaws idea, which is like, we're not going to show it to you, show a little piece of it.
Yeah.
And even when we do get full body shots of it, it's usually a little blurry in the background, or it's a very quick shot.
And I think it's interesting you mentioned it was very Cloverfield, because this almost was a Cloverfield movie.
Thank God it was.
So, did you guys read that they'd only had one test screening before this?
Yeah.
And it wasn't completed. And that John Krasinski played the monster in the motion capture suit.
Really?
And that's really what they saw. They just saw, like, him. And I can only imagine, like, and that's Jim from The Office, though. I can only imagine how much the movie would not work at all.
I feel that would be more like a Dwight
thing. Like, he's, like, fucking with Dwight or something. the white balls.
Weirdest apocalypse ever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, but you guys are right in that, yes, these are things we could nitpick about. These are things that are annoying in retrospect, but it's one of those things that while you're engaged in the movie, when it's got you hooked in, you're okay.
I agree with that. And I'll tell you what, when Emily Blunt's character went into labor and there's like a killer alien wandering around her house, and like that whole like 20, 30 minutes, I felt like an eon because it was so tense.
Yeah.
That is probably one of the most thrilling scenes I've seen in a horror movie in a really long time.
And this is coming from a person who was saying that it was stupid for this woman to have a baby.
Well, yeah. It was, but
instinctively, it's like, this woman's
that was
baby
because
a
crazy.
You're like, wow, bad call, but here we are.
Yeah.
So you move forward.
Yeah, and I mean, that whole part where she's in the bathtub, Jesus, like, I was literally like, I feel like I was holding my breath. I know I was clawing my husband.
I'll say right off the bat, like that scene when the first kid gets taken out.
That was gorgeous, great opening scene.
I saw that coming, and I was like,
"Well, you're supposed to."
You need to know what the stakes of this are. You know it's coming, but at the same time, like, it's set up a really. I love movies that do that shit. Like, oh, you're gonna kill a kid in the opening
scene.
Fuck yeah, this is my jam. him.
Which is now what you do after it. Everyone's like, we got to kill a kid.
Now
you
have to kill
scene.
A kid.
We got to kill a kid.
I'm not
just
mad about it.
It's a weird thing. I just watched a documentary about Pet Sematary, and they did not want to make that movie. They had to fight to get it made because a kid died in it. And back then, you just didn't do that.
But he was only undead.
Back.
He was half dead.
And then he was so creepy, you just wish he would die anyway. Yeah, it's one of those things, like, did you guys read the book? Did you read the treatment? Did you read the script?
Wait, I mean, you're surprised.
The kid died. You know, do we need a kid who dies? Yeah, that's kind of the whole
point of
the fucking
movie. I think I'll go for
a
walk. That's my second Monty Python reference today.
Yeah, it is.
But as far as a good, modestly budgeted horror film that is very tightly constructed, well-directed, wonderfully acted. Yes, I could complain about some things, but I'm happy that this movie exists. I'm happy that it's doing well. And I think it's great that you can make these kind of films that will actually...
Hey.
I mean, Rampage is coming out, and it's like, I know the guys who were here before us, we're loving the shit out of that. That's coming up soon. You know, Ready Player One, we reviewed that a few weeks ago. These 100 million blockbusters, like, these guys made a really tight movie for like $17 million with
but
like
even
five
more importantly,
people.
Even
and
more
it was
importantly,
better than those
not
movies.
Based on an existing
and
IP.
An original
screenplay, like really beautifully acted, like shows that you can make like smart genre films and they will open huge and you don't have to spend a lot of money and they can look gorgeous.
Absolutely.
And they can have, you know, great actors doing cool stuff. And, you know, I honestly, you're right. Like, in a lot of ways, like, this is, let's not look a gift horse in the mouth. Like, I will nitpick this movie, but I'm going to tell everyone I know. And you know what's funny?
Sunday night, I
was out after I saw it, and I ran into some people, and every person I ran into wanted it. Like, when they were like, oh, you know what movie I really want to see? The Quiet Place movie. I heard it's all silent. And they were really excited about the fact that it was quiet.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, it's great. It's really good, and you will super enjoy it.
Which proves, once again, as Get Out did, that smart... indie, like, horror films can really have a place with, like, you know, intelligently written characters that you can make a lot of money from. They don't all have to be dumb
and
slap
teenagers
dying. Yeah, exactly. But it also proved that Americans will go in droves to movies that are largely subtitled, which is something the distributors have been fighting.
I still remember going to see Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
So good.
That theater was packed.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like a Saturday afternoon, and everybody was in there.
I can't believe that was like the last time that happened.
Okay, you know? I saw that movie in a very small little town in North Texas with a good-sized crowd. And in front of me were a bunch of ladies, like a grandma and her daughter and like a little granddaughter. And the granddaughter was walking out afterwards. I like that movie, except all the Ching Chong Chinese. And I'm like, oh my
Jesus
God.
Jesus Christ.
And I was like, I was just like, I'm just going
to
keep it in and go away.
Welcome to Texas.
But you know what? But that little girl saw that movie.
She went to go see.
She saw it.
A Chinese language film.
And maybe she saw another one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not going to be too hard on a girl who's like, maybe was like 9 years
old. You're
going
to go find that girl and go, here, watch Hira.
Yeah.
This is next.
Hira was like a superior movie.
That crowd who was not, those were the last people you would have thought would be at that movie, and they went.
I just hope this movie will encourage people to keep making, A, original movies.
Yes.
B, lower budgeted, you know, genre films or whatever. And I think, like, you know, and also, you know, smarter movies, you know, they don't all have to be Transformers.
Like, oh, God. And I mean, all in all, I think we're all agreeing, like, the studios need to take more chances. And I think that they're learning that.
You know what they do, but then they get something like Edge of Tomorrow, which is a great movie, but made no money.
You know what?
And they decide, audiences don't want to see this type of stuff.
And then we get another fucking Justice League.
Was poor marketing.
Yeah.
They didn't market it right. But again, Emily Blunt, she's great in that movie.
Still, to complain for the billionth time, I can't believe they changed the title of that. What the hell?
Well, you know, who cares?
The original title was so good.
You know what? The movie exists, and I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, as we are with this one. So, that's our review. If you disagree, well, keep it to your fucking self.
Yeah, keep quiet.
Just kidding. You can disagree.